Blog Talk Radio.
Alright, you're listening to The Unknown Show. I'm your host, Bud Smith. Thanks for listening. On today's show, we're going to talk to Jessica Blau, author of The Summer of Naked Swim Parties, Paula Bulmer, author of 9 Months, and Chuck Howe, a writer who I like to get drunk with. Okay, this is my first attempt at talking over some jazz. I hope you don't think I've sold out. So, I hope you're all snapping your fingers and stuff. First off, thanks for listening. I hope you all had a good Memorial Day weekend. I know I had a real tough time dragging my ass out of bed and driving out of New York City this morning. I work in an oil refinery in New Jersey, and I still stink like fuel. So me and my wife Spout had a really good time. We stayed put in the city instead of our usual drive down to the beach. And yesterday we walked around the Upper West Side, and I was happy as hell to find some great records between 71st and 74th on Broadway. There's like a whole line of little great stands that have used books and VHS tapes and piles of records. And I picked up Devo, a couple Devo albums, Bruce Springsteen album, and another copy of Bat Outta Hell, because one can never have enough copies of Bat Outta Hell. So our first guest on the show today is going to be Jessica Blau, and she's the author of many, many great books. Drinking Close to Home came out last year. The Summer of Naked Swim Parties. And she's also got a new book out right now called The One Red Summer. Jessica, are you there? Let's see if I can pull her from the shelf. Jessica, are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me? No, you can't hear me?
No, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Hi.
How's it going? What's up?
It's going good. Everything's good. Do you really work in an oil refinery?
Yeah, I work in an oil refinery. I been like heavy construction in Jersey, so I do like all kinds of shit there, welding and just
wow.
You know, building power plants and oil refineries and stuff. Stuff to do for my
wow.
You know, writers have these goofy little gigs until they. If they're lucky enough to not have to work, right? That's
right.
True.
So, what do you wear, like a hard hat and like big boots and?
Oh yeah,
that kind
I
of
have
thing?
To. Yeah, I have to. I gotta wear hard hat, gloves, safety glasses. They make us all wear like a fireproof suit.
Wow.
It's just like pretty much like fancy or well, not fancy, but it's like jeans. You know, the suit. So it's like a jumpsuit, kind of like heavy denim, and.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's fun.
Cool.
That's cool.
I'm impressed. That's impressive.
Yeah, it's cool.
Very cool.
I meet a lot of really cool people who people were definitely out of their minds, you know.
Listen to your show?
No, nobody I work with really reads. They're not really big readers. I work with one guy who's a really cool dude, but he reads. And I give him props for this because he's the only guy I work with who reads. And he reads like Jackson, and sometimes he'll read like a Stephen King. And I'll just give him props for that. I mean, more power
right.
to you.
Right. But maybe if they listened to the show and they heard the writers talk, they'd want to read.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just not really. Some people just aren't readers, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of great people in the world who just aren't readers, but.
Yeah.
You know, what can you do? Yeah.
Well, you know, you can beat them up.
You can read to them.
That would be awesome. I usually, I'll be honest with you, a lot of times when I'm at work, how we entertain ourselves is basically people just telling, like, really screwed up stories of, like, drugs and sex and arrests and car crashes. So, yeah, I should bring in, like, Great Gatsby and read that to him or something.
You got to bring in my book, The Wonder Red Summer. It's all about drugs and sex and a car and a car crash. I mean, that's all it is. I mean, it starts with like a guy showing her his dick and then her running away with a bread bag full of cocaine.
Oh yeah. No, I'm definitely really psyched about your new book. I was just reading the synopsis on it's popping up all different spots. I think I was reading on Amazon the synopsis. I was just like, "Wow, that's awesome." It's like a Wonder Bread bag full of cocaine and a getaway.
But I want those oil refinery guys to read it. Like, I want to go out there and do like oil refinery book club or something.
I was I'm friends with I'm in communication with Jen Mikalski, and she was just in the city last week.
She's great.
She had her book, her novellas that just came out. Could You Be With Her Now? So whatever, I brought them to work. I usually don't read at work, and the guys were like, "What are you reading?" And like the cover of the book is like, you know, it's a really cool cover, but it just looks like a romance novel. And when I told them what the book was about, a couple guys were like, "Wow, that sounds like a really cool book," you know. So maybe there is hope. Maybe there is hope for these guys.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, you know, I mean, Jen's intense. They would definitely like her book.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about Wonder Bread Summer. What's going on with it? It's a did it just come out today?
It came out today. Yeah.
Jesus,
so today is the pub day.
Yeah.
It came out today. It's about Berkeley and Oakland in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And I can't believe my publicist didn't get a copy to you, but we will get one to you.
Okay.
Tomorrow or whatever, they can overnight it.
Okay.
But it's Berkeley in the 80s. I mean, I lived in Berkeley in the 80s, and this book, I went to school at Berkeley, and I stayed in town one summer, and I got a job at this little boutique,
you know,
supporting myself for the summer, and nobody ever came in. There were no customers, and we never sold anything, and the guy who owned the shop, he was constantly trying to pay me with cocaine. But I really needed money. I was supporting myself. So then he would just pull wads of cash out of his pocket and he'd pay me with cash. There was no like time card or signing in. And nobody ever came in. And it took me a while to realize that it was actually a front for cocaine dealing. so essentially it was, I can't believe that you'd actually hire somebody to work in this shop when it's just cover for cocaine. But you know, I guess he did. I mean, there was, like, the occasional woman would walk in. I mean, it was in this part of town where nobody was. It was, like, boarded up places. And there was a barbecue joint a couple doors over. I mean, nobody was there. There was, like, a liquor store on the corner just full of people hanging out.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you just would never go there to buy a dress. And every now and then some woman would walk in and buy something, and it was always, you know, I was always so excited to have a customer. I'd be like, personal shopper. And so eventually I realized this guy was dealing cocaine, but I really needed the job, so I kept working. And then, this guy, he started just pulling out his dick at work every day. We can say, can we say whatever we want on here, or do we have to watch
him?
Yeah.
I mean, if I watched that on the show, I would.
Right. Okay. So this guy, he kept pulling out his dick at work, and things got worse and worse and worse. So I was thinking about that job, and I wrote a fictional story that starts sort of there at that moment. And so that's how I got the book. Well, and the other thing that happened is I was in my apartment around the same time, and this guy I knew came running into my apartment carrying a bread bag, and then he unwound it and showed me it was a bread bag full of coke. And it kind of freaked me out just to see that much coke and the fact that he ran in and he was panting. And, you know, I was just like waiting for somebody with guns to come running in after him. And, you know, I kind of kicked him out. I was like, what are you? You know, and he didn't really tell me where he got it, and he left. So anyway, I took those two ideas, that bread bag full of cocaine and my friend who ran into my apartment with it, and this shop where I worked for the coke dealer, and I just sort of put them together and created a story.
That's awesome.
And, well, I hope you like it. I mean, I hope people like it. But that was, so it's sort of, you know, and then I took all these weird people that I knew in Berkeley. Have you ever been to Berkeley?
I'm going actually 4th of July weekend. I got invited out to Berkeley, some kind of big poetry bar crawl thing called Beast Crawl. It's 4th of July weekend up, so I'm going out there for
great.
That. Yeah.
Is it your first time out there?
I think I was in San Francisco, so I must have been in Berkeley when I was like, 21. I drove cross country, and I was driving through California for like a month, and I just wound up in San Francisco and the area around it. I don't know where I was, so yeah, probably.
Yeah, I mean, so you know what kind of place it is. I mean, it's just...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's such a great place, and it's just so bizarre, and every strange and interesting human on Earth is there. And
yeah.
So there's all these odd characters in the book, but they're all really based on... You know, they're all inspired by people I actually knew in Berkeley. So as strange as they are, they're all kind of real, you know, in some form or another.
I get such a kick out of when writers do more of the autobiographical slant. I mean, it may not, you know, you're being fiction, but obviously pulling things from your life, pulling things from your experience, it kind of, like, I think just this whole, like, war. That happens with a rare tell. Like, you know, when you're reading something by an author, you know, most of the time I think a reader kind of like, no matter what it is, it's like, oh wow, this is my life. I think
right.
Times when you can definitely draw more of a parallel. So that always interests me more. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, definitely my first two books were just autobiography, and this is more like taking things that actually happened and then throwing them together and creating total fiction from it. So it's not so much tracing
awesome.
And looking over things that actually happened. You know, you're bumping out. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
I can hear noises.
This show was a little, it's a little bit, yeah.
So did
just
I move?
Because
I can't hear you. I just hear a little peep. Oh. I can't hear you, bud.
I saw the connection just get a little higher. Hang on a second. Do you hear me now?
I hear you. Yeah, I hear you better now. You're a little spotted.
I was going to do
are
that.
Are you there? Should I move?
No,
oh, wait,
you're
fine.
Back. You're fine.
Okay,
sometimes
now you're there.
It's a little spotty. So, Aside from your new book, Wonder Bread Summer, you have a couple things that I'm sure your readers are pretty familiar with. But for people who are listening in, can you kind of give like a quick overview of? Let's start with Drinking Closer to Home. What's that about?
I mean, Drinking Closer to Home pretty much just looked at my family growing up. I grew up in Southern California.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, like my dad grew marijuana, and so there were like
uh-huh.
massive marijuana plants in the backyard, and my parents swam naked, and my sister was a little manic, and she's great, but she was, you know, a little crazed sometimes. My brother's gay. My one grandparents were these sort of crazy, neurotic Orthodox Jews. My other grandparents were these anti-Semitic, waspy Vermont land barons. And so it's just sort of looking at the family and all the crazy things that happen, addictions, and just this sort of looking at the family. So it's sort of fiction. Oh, and the other thing that happened is when we were little kids, and this happened in real life, my mother quit. She came and she told me and my sister, my brother was like two, and she said, "I quit." And we said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "I quit. I'm not a housewife anymore, and you guys have to do everything." So my sister and I were really young, so we took care of my brother, and we had to clean the house, and my sister would wake me up for school, and she would pack lunches, and we'd, you know, we'd just get ourselves places, and we'd get ourselves back, and we'd, at the beginning of every year, we'd write our own school notes so that our own signatures were on file at school, and we had to do all our own school paper, you know, and we just did everything ourselves. And so part of the book kind of, the book takes place as the three grown children who represent me, my brother, and my sister come back to the mother who had a heart attack, but then it goes back in the past and sort of examines what led them there. So it was this incredibly kind of wacky, crazy childhood. You know, my brother had a bird that we just let loose out of the cage, and he would just like shit all over the couch in the family room, so there was just bird shit like encrusted on this one couch that he liked to hang over. And it was just this, I mean, at the time it was just, that's how it was. I mean, it just was what it was. And actually I was a really happy kid. And, you know, we were in Southern California, and I'd ride my bike to the beach after school, and, you know, we had fun. But there was so much kind of craziness and dysfunction, but we just sort of glided through it, each in our own way, my sister much differently than I, my brother differently than two of us. So Drinking Closer to Home sort of examines that, going back in time and coming to when you have these three people grown up and how they end up. And then The Summer of Naked Swim Parties, my first book, just looks at one summer for one girl, and I picked 1976 because it was that, you know, this crazy jingoistic bicentennial 4th of July
uh-huh.
lunacy. So it was a little more fiction, but it was sort of like how, it definitely showed how things were for me. And it was the nudist parents and the pot smoking and all that, and I got rid of the brother because it was easier just to have two sisters. And, you know, and so it was just this intense summer, and the protagonist, you know, losing her virginity and trying pot and all that. You know, it was a coming of age. And now the you know, Wonder Bread Summer is in a Berkeley cocaine on the lam, figuring out how to stay alive when you're running away with a Wonder Bread bag full of cocaine.
Great. I mean now what reason and getting around with that, or what's come up on your schedule for to do the, you know, promoting your book? No one wants to.
Well, I'll be at KGB in New York on the 2nd.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. Come.
I'm going to come. I'll come meet you. It'll be fun.
Bring the guys from the refinery, man. We're going to start a refinery book club.
You know what? I will. I'm going to bring some of these guys out. We'll have, you know, have to drink some beer with some of these refinery guys. It'll be fun.
Yeah, definitely. Bring them. Yeah, so it'll be KGB June 2nd. I'll be in Portland the 17th. I'll be in Seattle the 18th. I'll be up and down California. Are you going? When are you going? Oh, you're going in July.
Yeah, July
1st. Yeah, I'll be mostly June. I'll be in Los Angeles the 21st. I'll be in Santa Barbara the 20th. I'll be in D.C. in July. I mean, there's different things. I'll be in Baltimore 26th and the 14th. I'll be in Baltimore also. So there's just, you know, there's things coming. But, yeah, for all your New York, New Jersey, Connecticut people, KGB, June 2nd, and I think it's 6 o'clock. but maybe, yeah, sure, you know. But come. I'll try and put it up on my webpage. I haven't done that yet.
I will.
Yeah. Come out. Bring your friends. Bring your wife. And I'm reading with three other people. Rob Roberge, Elizabeth Crane, and Allison Amend. So it should be good. Oh, I can't hear you again. I don't know if you're there. Oh, I can't hear you at all. All right, Bud, should I call back or should I hang out and wait? Because I really can't hear anything. Bud? All right, send me a text on my cell phone.
All right, so sometimes this show gets a little connection, so hopefully we get it back on track here. Oh, fuck. Uno momento, por favor.
You're muted?
Oh, God, yeah, sometimes this fucking show drops all the callers and shit. But anyway, I called back in on my cell phone. Skype booted me off. Sai, you still there?
It's Paula here.
Paula, what's up?
Oh, hey, I'm here too. I just called back. Paula?
Hi, Jessica and Bud.
Oh, yes.
Hey, Paula. Hi. Congratulations on your book coming out and getting fabulous reviews.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. And I sent my mother your other book, and she's like your biggest fan now. She's like going to start a fan club for you.
Oh, my goodness. That's so sweet.
I'm already in your fan club. So, all right, I'm going to sign off because I've already talked. So I think it's your turn to be on the Bud Smith show now.
Oh, no.
So, well, great talking briefly, Jessica. And
right.
I'm just so excited about the Wonder Bread, your book coming out. And
oh,
yay,
thanks.
Jessica.
So hopefully I'll see both of you in New York at KGB on the 2nd.
Yes,
sounds
great.
I will
great.
See you in New York. Thanks
you
for calling, Jessica.
Did you create an event on Facebook or anything so I can remember?
Yeah, I'll go on and invite you. Somebody created it. I'll go on and invite you. I'll go on and invite you both.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot.
All right, so hopefully I'll see you, and then I'm going to figure out how I can dial in to listen to you guys talk. But thank you, Bud. You're great. Thanks. And Paula, one of my favorite writers, and hopefully I'll see you guys soon.
Yes.
Hey, Jessica, if you want to listen in, stay on the line right now, and I'll just I'll mute you, and you can listen. You can keep listening.
Okay, that sounds great. Yeah, do that. Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much for calling in, okay?
All right, thank you. Take care.
Bye. So everybody who's listening, I want to introduce our next caller. It is none other than Paula Bomer. Paula Bomer is the author of 9 Months, Soho Press, and Baby and Other Stories, Word Riot Press. Love both those places, by the way. And also the forthcoming collection, Inside Madeline, also from Soho Press. And she is the publisher and editor of Centennia Books. So what's going on, Paula? How are you doing today?
I'm great, thanks. I just had a really great long weekend. So even though it's Tuesday, I mean, I'm having a little bit of a Monday. Because I. But otherwise, all things are going well.
Yeah. Yeah. As we were going to go, you know, wife, we're going to go out to like a big ass bonfire in Pennsylvania, but that got derailed weather-wise. And the guy who, you know, he knew all these people who had all this shit they were going to burn. And, you know, so he had all the friends out there. And then my friend got sick, so we weren't able just to go there and hang out with complete strangers and burn crap in the middle of Pennsylvania. So.
Oh, that sounds like it would have been fun. It was the rain that made that impossible?
Yeah, well, it was rain, so that was kind of like, it was drizzling a little bit, but we probably could have still gone, but it's just like that whole thing where it's like, you know, you get invited to a party by a friend, and then the friend is sick or can't go, so I'm like, man, now I can't go, because I don't know nobody, you know?
Well, yeah. I was just upstate with my family. I have a house in Hale Eddy, which is like population 50.
Yeah.
And so my two teenagers, I force them occasionally to go with me. They used to go, we used to spend our summers there and weekends. And then my older son turned 13 and just was like, absolutely not, Mom. I'm not spending every weekend with you. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
You want to spend time with other teenagers and not me? That's so sad. But this weekend, it was a long weekend, and it was my birthday. So I forced them to come and hang out with me. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah. I saw something. Happy, 22nd birthday, Paula? Happy 22nd birthday. I hope you got everything that was on your list.
Yeah. I got my husband spoils me rotten, but I did get older, which I hate. I wish I could be getting younger. Getting younger would be awesome. Someone has to figure that out. Like, I don't know how to figure that out. Someone has to figure it out. I'm going to freeze my head. Me and my friend Shotzi, that's his nickname. His real name is Ron. He's going to freeze his head. And I'm thinking about freezing my head so that I could be young again, like get some different body.
Oh, you're going to do like, you know, so what you got to do is first of all, I know a few things about this. I listen to a podcast called The Stuff You Should Know. It's fairly popular, but I pretend like I'm like the only person who listens to that shit. And there was a podcast on Absolute Zero, which is like freezing
body parts.
Yeah, you can freeze the body so cold, I guess, that molecules will be able to be reanimated and everything. So you got to do that. So basically,
I think you have to be really rich. So that might be a bit of a hurdle. But, yeah, getting older, you know, it's so much better than being dead, but also just really, no one prepares you for how awful it is to be middle-aged. And also, I'm not even middle-aged because I'm 45, and I'm not going to I'm not going to live to 90. So what am I? Am I already old age? That's kind of, you know, it's just, I'm already just old.
I don't think so. I keep passing this billboard on my way to work, and it's like, it's saying, like, the first person to live to 120 years alive, and that depresses the fuck out of me because I'm like, every time I see that billboard, I'm like, oh my God, Soylent Green, you know? I just picture all these, this earth overpopulated with just all these
old people. And that freaks you out. It's already that way, right? Like the boomer generation or something.
Yeah. It doesn't freak me out. It doesn't freak me out that old people will be around. It just freaks me out that, you know, everybody's just going to, I don't know, just keep living and living and living. your life expectancy keeps going on. They're going to swap an organ out. It just keeps going.
I have really shitty genes, so I'm not going to live for very long. But, the whole prolonged – well, my next book I want to write about you know, being miserable in middle age. And, like, basically at 45, you have your hormonal problems are as bad as, like, being a teenager, except that you're not a teenager, so you're not young. You don't have your life ahead of you. You just have all these horrible hormonal problems. and like you lose your hair, you grow whiskers.
Yes.
It's just fucking disgusting. Uh-huh. But being old, yeah. No, I also, my mom is in a Alzheimer's unit, and that's something that I want to address in my next book, taking care of aging parents. And then the worst thing is when your parents die on you, which my father died, and that was just like,
yeah.
you know, and then you're just miserable for the rest of your life because you have a dead father. But anyway, yeah, that's kind of where I am. My next, I was thinking of doing a sequel to 9 months because someone asked for it. And then,
well,
you know, the 9 months
gonna,
is about,
I was gonna,
yeah?
I was going to say the same, no, I didn't really say the same exact thing, but I wanted to point out, like, what you're talking about right now is just, like, people who are listening who aren't familiar with your book, 9 months, it is, it's like a major, like, just fun tour de force. Like, what a cool book. It's about, I'll give a quick synopsis, and then you can slap me around a little bit and tell everybody what it's really about. 9 months is about a woman who's pregnant with her third baby, and she decides just to say, fuck it. And then she, like, ditches her family and goes on, like, a wild kind of cross-country trip and casual sex, smoking weed, whatever she wants to do, just having fun and just rediscovering her life, right?
I think that's a pretty that's a good summation. It's definitely, she's having an identity crisis and she's a little wild, but not you know, not that bad. I got a lot of 1-star reviews and people don't like her.
Oh,
and then other people really like her.
I was reading through them and I was reading through those reviews and I was fucking stitches. Oh, I loved it. Because it's always like, you know, no offense, but it's always some like 14-year-old girl in Kansas who's writing a review and she's just like, I don't understand why someone would write something against the Lord like this. I'm just like,
Yeah. No, that's not my audience.
So
people, you know, I think that there's a little bit of a problem of like, if you write about motherhood, then some people are going to pick up the book thinking that it's going to be this kind of sweet book. And that's not my interest. You know, my interest is inspired by, I have a fake Philip Roth character that I've talked about, but that's, his Zuckerman books were a huge influence for 9 months. And then I made a fake Philip Roth character in the book, and I call him Philbert Rush. But it's my fake relationship with Philip Roth. And so that's the kind of what I was going for. And if you read those books, I mean, he has this, first of all, Zuckerman, in Zuckerman Vown, he's on drugs. He's like on pain relievers. And he impersonates a pornographer on an airplane and has people like running, screaming from him. And just, you know, over-the-top satire, that's also social commentary, I guess, you know, which all good satire should be or try to be.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I'm going to get some people who think it's, you know, like, you know, a Nora Roberts book. And then they're just going to they're not going to like my book. And
well,
I'm
like,
okay with that, but it's just amazing.
You really should be.
Yeah. It sometimes hurts, though. There was one, there's a few times it hurts when, like, you know, this writer Facebook friended me years ago when Baby came out.
Yeah.
And then I see he wrote a really nasty review on Amazon. Why are you on Facebook friends with someone who wrote me a just totally, he said, like, this is awful, she's awful, this book's boring. I mean, I think the book has some, is, you know, maybe it's not perfect, but I don't know if it's boring.
Yeah.
I mean, it is offensive. Yeah. It's supposed to be offensive. I was shooting for that. But,
Go
hey,
on,
listen,
John, I dig it. I dig the book. I hope people pick it up. And I hope they appreciate it for what I appreciate it for. It's kind of like just like a little, like a punk rock kind of jaunt through maybe like middle age when like it's an identity crisis. And
yes.
I loved
yeah.
it. I thought it was cool.
Well, that's good. I'm glad. And my next book that's coming out is there's not one mother. So, but it's very much still in the same style as of. Probably going to offend a lot of people, but they're all
good.
The protagonists are age 12 to 22, I think, are the ages. So they're young, you know, girls and women in really messed up situations generally.
Yeah.
You know, drug use, profanity, bad sex, eating disorders, stuff like that. And I'm really excited about it. I'm excited to be working with Mark Doten, who's my editor. He's been amazing. So,
So impressed, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I just I dedicated 9 months to him and my husband, but working with him has just been amazing. To finally feel somebody like you, we have a real working relationship. Some editors aren't as involved, but Mark and I have he really helps me out, and that's good because I'm a little sloppy and I needed some direction.
Jesus, I know the feeling. But I can second that sentiment. You know, when you find a good editor, somebody to team up on a project.
Special, right?
It really is, yeah. It's really cool.
So that's what we're doing that now. We're in the final edits for Inside Madeline. The novella is called Inside Madeline, and then there's a bunch of stories. That was published also. Minna Proctor published it in the Literary Review, which is a journal out of Fairleigh Dickinson. Listen to me, I don't even know how to pronounce it. Anyway, so she's been a great champion. And I just feel, it sucks being 45, but it's great that finally I'm getting some of my work out there. So
I think
it took a while.
There's an unspoken rule that you don't get recognized until you are 45.
My first book was like I was 42. Well, Ross, I think my favorite stuff that he was doing was in his 40s and 50s, definitely. Which brings me to young people. Inside Madeline was really written over, this sounds kind of crazy, but over the past 20 years. A lot of it I started ages ago and then really abandoned and then came back to, and now I'm, doing final revisions and added some new stories. But mostly people in their 20s, I went to grad school, wanted to be a writer, and I went to grad school at City College, which was great. Harlem, except that it was an hour commute from where I lived in Brooklyn on the A train back when it was kind of scary. But anyway,
I pass that all the time on my way down to do cool shit because I live uptown.
That's right, you're in Washington Heights, so you're right near that. I was there in the mid '90s, so it was a little different. Not that different though. Everyone's like, "Oh my God, Harlem's so Harlem's changed." It's like, it really hasn't changed that much. At least not the City College part. I was there for a reading, which was wonderful. They had me there for a reading. It was so cool to do a reading at my alma mater. That was really fun. But what was the point? Oh, just being in your 20s, I just want my body back, but otherwise I don't want my brain back from that time. It can be really, or be the writer that I was in my 20s. I'm really happy not to be, I'm really happy to be a middle-aged writer regarding my life experience and brain. I'd rather have the body of a 22-year-old. That would be awesome.
It's also, there's got to be something that happens because I'm 31. I'm about to turn 32. I'm a baby. Yeah, I really am. I have a rattle and a baby.
You're a young man.
I'm a young man. I'm just sitting here, rolling around playing with my toys, and I got my that baby thing that floats around in the sky above the baby where he's baby sit in the crib, whatever. What is that?
What do 31-year-old men do? Do you play video games all the time or stuff like that? Or you get to just kind of.
I don't play video games. What this 31-year-old guy does is, I live here in a city, so we got that. So there's always, things to do. But generally, my 31-year experience is I go to work. I work from 7 until 3, and I come home, and I write almost every night. So I'm writing from about, 4 o'clock in the evening until maybe 8. And that's my general day.
That's a good long stretch, 4 hours. I'm a morning writer. I used to be an evening writer. Now I'm a morning writer, and it's really just a couple of hours, and then I need to take a break, and then sometimes I go back to it in the afternoon. But I remember reading about Graham Greene, and he wrote 500 words a day. I've written like 5 books, so this is my third one is about to get published. But anyway, for one of them, I really stuck to this whole Graham Greene thing, and that's where these interviews with writers can be useful, to aspiring writers.
That's why I do this.
But he just did his 500 words every day, and that really added up over the decades that he wrote. But he'd start writing at 8:30, and he often was done at 9:30. And then he just, you know, probably we were just, who was I discussing with someone? And then he probably just drank all day. I think my husband was, you know, joking about that.
Yeah.
But
that's great.
But and then, you know, he went back and revisited in the evening. And so I kind of got into the habit of doing that when I wrote a book, an unpublished novel called Tante Eva. And then that's kind of been, that's my thing. But four hours is awesome. I know people who can write like 8 hours a day. It blows my mind. That's just, you know,
I
start fading.
The thing, it's not always 4 hours a day. Quickly, I'll tell you, because you brought it up, you talked about your Graham Greene method and that you kind of followed it. I'll quickly say what I did. I've got a few novels that are floating around with presses right now. And, I'm just waiting to hear word.
That's great. Congratulations.
Yeah. Oh, it's a lot of fun, you know. I actually have one that got picked up. It's coming out the end of this month. And but I'll tell you my method. I just wrote one called F-250. Now, what I did was I actually wrote the whole book on my phone at work, on my iPhone, like the first draft, just in my notes, you know, the notes section. I would write on just my lunch break, just that 40 minutes that I would get for lunch. And what I would do was I outlined the book, and I had an index card for each little chapter, right? So what I would do is before I would leave, I would take a photo of a couple index cards for the chapters. When I get to work, I would just look at them throughout the day and just be like, okay, well, this is what I'll be writing at for 40 minutes in the middle of the day. And
that adds up.
Right? It really does.
No. And I mean, I was writing too when my kids were small. And so now the weird thing is that I have all the time on the planet Earth because they have they just want nothing to do with me almost, which is heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah.
But
little fuckers.
I know they're huge. They're 6'4" and 6'1", and they're big, smelly teenagers. And anyway, that's my next book is Smelly Teenagers and Dying Parents. But it's harder for
me. You gonna call it that?
What's that?
You think you're really gonna call it that? That's an awesome title.
What's that?
Smelly Teenagers and Dying Parents.
You think that should be the title? I didn't have a title. I just know that that's my life right now. So it just, I feel like that's my next, I'm excited about this book that's coming out about coming of age stories and young women. But my next, I haven't written yet serious, like, you know, middle-aged book and dying parents book and having teenagers, which is so different, you know, than my other books are about having babies. And having babies is just it's different. Teenagers are totally different. You know, they're having sex and doing drugs and lying to you. Uh-huh. And it's, you know, it's different than a 2-year-old who's just like, you know, oh, he it's hard to potty train. Like, whatever, man. It's just, it's scarier to watch them go out into the world just to get a little deep there. But, yeah, so that's my next book. Who knows when that's going to come out? We'll see. And my time isn't as precious as it used to be, and so I don't utilize it as well. And that's got to change. Something's got to change about that.
Oh, I know what you mean.
When you're pressed for time, you only have your 40 minutes, you're going to make it really useful, right? Like you made your lunch break really useful. When my kids was like, okay, I have a babysitter just for 2 hours today, and, you know, I would write. And now it's like, I'm alone all day long. I have dogs to keep me company. And, so it's harder to be disciplined.
I think the other thing to do is just like you say, like, for instance, like, your time isn't as precious, so it slips away. But also, like, I guess there's, like, that whole thing with just saying, like, okay, well, this is the first draft, so... You know, you're just gonna write the thing.
Not worry about it, is what you're saying.
Probably gonna suck, but that's fine. That's good. But as far as like your time's not precious,
right? No,
I have the union job, so I used to, you know, fairly often half the year be laid off. You know, so talk about free time.
Wow.
I mean, I'm talking like, you know what I mean? Like I'd have 5 months out of the year.
And were you productive?
Oh God, yeah, yeah. I really was, but my writing hadn't really come along yet. So the output was there, and drafts are still around. So every once in a while, I'm making time on my calendar now to go through these books and write new drafts and shit, you know. But
That's
all
interesting.
Like you said.
Well, some of the stuff I salvaged from my, you know, from 20 years ago, and then other stuff, it's like, oh my goodness, thank God there was no internet 20 years ago. Because if I would gotten this published in some little journal, because every, you know, it's so easy to get, like, you know, and I'm like, and it sucked, and I'd have my name on it, and it would be out there in the world, and thank God it's in my closet. Like, oh, that's another good thing about being old. I'm always trying to think of good things about being old, that my shitty stuff that I wrote 20 years ago isn't out, you know, like, out in the world. Although some of it was salvageable, obviously, from my forthcoming book is based on some stuff I started when I was young, and then, you know, in my 20s, and that's when I was first dedicating myself to writing fiction. Anyway, I'm curious about, like, I was very lucky to get shitty Amazon reviews and Goodreads reviews, because people are like, she uses the F word, and, you know, it's graphic sex, and, you know.
I wonder what these people are, what they're really missing out. If they don't have a graphic sex, and they're not saying fuck and cunt all the time, they're missing out on life. That's like a big,
story
of life, you know? Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, I've done
whatever.
Book. Yeah, no, that's funny. I love that. That's hilarious. I don't understand. Yeah, like, the F word is like the, like, when I first, like, learned about, like, using the word fuck all the time, I was probably, like, 8. I don't know. Anyway, and it was just a life-changing experience. It's a great word. And cursing is just, it's like an art form in my family. We just totally try to outdo each other with the cursing, and I have some really tough competition with my children, although they do, my son, oh my God, another word, I don't mind using the word cunt, which a lot of people think is just like the worst word in the world, but I've spent some time in England, my best friend lives in England, and everybody calls each other a cunt there, so I'm just, and I also like to use it as a verb, like that woman just cunted all over me, and And my kids are used to it. And then I'm like, you know, you can't really say that because you're a 16-year-old boy. And he said, Mom, you know, you say it all the time and you call me one all the time. So I'm not, he's like, it's in my brain. So I'm just like, oh, man. Oh, well. Anyway, but, and then he's like, and you call me a vagina. I went through a phase of calling them a vagina. It would get them to stop fighting when they were bickering, you know. And now,
like,
it's
if you're going to fight, fucking kill each other, you little vaginas.
Exactly. Like, you're bickering. No, it was more like you're bickering like a couple of little vaginas, you know, like making. Anyway, it was really misogynist, but using it towards my. And then they used to shut up, which was great. They'd stop bickering. And now they just, like, name call back. And I've lost all my power over them for the most part.
Yeah.
Mind you, I just, this morning, I never wake up early. I'm my eighth grader. He's just turned 14 and graduating and going to high school. He won I'm the Smartest Kid in the School award today, and I got to go and I put on a dress. And so here I am talking about, like, making myself kind of look bad and my kids look bad.
Do the other kids go to this ceremony too, though? Like, so he has to go up there and the other kids have to look at him up there and be like,
he had to stand up. His name is on a plaque. His name's on a plaque that's on the hallway of the school. And he just gets, you know, he gets all A pluses. And also people him because he's just great. I told him, he's like, no, it was just my grades. I'm like, no, it's not just your grades. It's also because you have to be a nice person. It was a kind of special, like, humanitarian grade award. I don't know. Anyway, I was so proud of him. So,
you should be proud.
I'm so proud of both of my kids. I mean, but and they're kind of proud of me. They don't read my books, which is fine. Occasionally, friends of theirs' mothers read my books. One accidentally, and then the other, I was like, "Here, you should give this to your mother," and that was kind of probably a mistake. But I go by, I go by kind of a pen name. Like, my real name isn't Bomer. I mean, it's my maiden name. I go by my maiden name as a writer.
Name like Super Bomer or something? Or like
But when I introduce myself, like, to, you know, one of the rare things that I do around school, I go by, my last name is Rockwell. That's my husband's name. Yeah. So I have a little bit of privacy as a writer that way, which I think is kind of a fun thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's so many things we've touched on in this interview. I think you've kind of unlocked a lot of the secrets of life. I haven't. You have.
Well, thank you, Doug, for having me. Thank you for having me on your show.
I'm not kicking you off yet because I'm just very intrigued with still this discussion. I feel bad because Jessica Blau really got fucked earlier because sometimes the connections on the show is a little fucked up. You can do Skype.
You can have her. You can have her again, maybe. She's great.
Yeah,
I would definitely.
Yeah, I wanted to hear more of those joke stories. That's awesome. The her boss trying to pay her with coke. That's a funny ass story.
Oh my goodness, her novel. I read it and I feel so proud that she asked me to blurb it. So and she's blurbed. She's been very generous to me. Anyway, she's just great. She's hilarious and in person too. Oh, I can't wait to see her. We'll see each other on June 2nd, all three of us.
Bring $5 because you got to buy me a beer. And I'll bring a $5 bill to buy you a beer. How's that sound?
I'll definitely buy you a beer. Happy to buy you a beer. I'm looking forward to it, bud.
Well, it was a great pleasure to talk to you on the show. I was waiting because I was hoping Meg Tewitt was calling in. She's all over.
She's in the desert, like on a motorcycle. That was just a funny little exchange. I think the time difference is probably challenging. But when Meg's book, I'm publishing Meg's book in the fall. You should definitely have her, and I can send you a manuscript. And you should totally talk to her. She's hilarious, sweet, and
Meg
wonderful.
Meg is on the show all the time. Meg is on the show.
Oh, she is.
She calls up. She reads some great stuff. She's awesome. She's
She's my
radio buddy here, you know.
That's great. I didn't know, and I'm so happy to hear that.
So listen, I'm excited. We'll definitely hang out with you a second. Thanks for calling in, and I hope everybody checks out your book, 9 months, and I'll be looking for your new manuscript coming out. I'm excited to see it, Inside Madeline. So
thanks so much, bud.
So take care, okay?
Okay, you too. Bye bye.
Bye-bye. So our next caller, Chuck, how are you there?
I am here. How are you doing?
Dude, I'm awesome, man. You've been on hold for like an hour and a half. Sorry about that.
No problem. When I heard you were cutting out, I tried to kind of go on and be like, hey, do you want me to try and take over? But glad you came back.
Yeah, it was... I was trying to do something new. It gives you the option of doing this shit through Skype, which is like you can connect, through the internet, do like a phone talk through the internet. But I don't know.
Well, you sound great now, honey.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
Great. I have a phone in my ear now. I'm just like spinning around in my my Aeron chair that I found in the trash. Just kind of gliding around the room. What are you doing right now? Are you down in your down in your little Chuck cave? Where were you hanging out?
Yes, I am. And actually, a buddy of mine just came in. He's actually, I should plug this for him. He's Andy Casisto, who's going to be playing with Modest Yahoo.
Oh, opening shit.
For him at the Tarrytown Music Hall on when? Sunday, June 16th.
Wow,
which
that's
is Father's
awesome.
Day. Take your father.
Oh, that is great. I'm going to actually ditch my father, and I'm going to go to that show. I'm
going
to probably tell my dad that I can't hang out because I'm playing in a band. So, if Andrew, if you get a call from my dad, you got to cover for me. I'm filling in for your drummer. How's that sound?
There you go. It sounds perfect.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So, for people who don't know, we're talking to Chuck Howe. He's one of my real-life friends. I know everybody's got these internet friends, but Chuck is a real person, and... Just over the weekend, we got together and I drank a bunch of his rum and stuff. And
you know what? Your leftover rum came in handy because I just got I just got a jury questionnaire, and I spilled a little bit of the rum on it. So I figure that means I'm not going to be picked for jury duty.
That's fucking.
Or
awesome.
I am.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have to go to jury duty because I'm like a scumbag union guy, so I can like. I can, like, get out of it and pretend like I have, like, the most important, like, union job and all this lying bullshit. It's horrible. I should do my civic duty.
I have to say that the last time I did jury duty, it was like just a complete comedy. It was a tragedy in a comedy. It was a woman who was in a wheelchair who was complaining that her nurse had sexually abused her. I was the only guy on the jury. And throughout the whole thing, it came out that the woman in the wheelchair just did not like black people. So it almost just seemed like that's why she brought up the thing. Of course, I'm the only guy on the jury. I'm thinking, great, is everybody else here going to be like, oh, no, she's guilty? And I'm going to be like, oh, I don't think she did. You know, but luckily everybody was like, oh, no, that woman was just insane. But it came out in the trial that she was in a wheelchair because she had robbed a bank, and leaving the bank robbery, she got hit by a car.
Oh, my God.
And I was,
First of all, she
had the worst lawyer in the world to let that come out. But, it was just, So I'm hoping maybe it'll be a funny thing like that.
I bet it will be. I think Ray, my wife Ray Spout, she got called in to do jury duty, and it was for a murder. And oh my God! So she's thinking she was going to be like out of work for like a month and shit. But they dismissed the case, not enough evidence. So they just threw it out. I'm always in the back of my mind a little bit excited to go to. I would probably go if I got, if I really did get a jury duty slip, because first of all, I don't want to go to work anyway. So any reason I could not go to work, sure, I'll go to the courthouse and read my book and wait to get in. One of my favorite movies is My Cousin Vinny. So I would just totally want to go and just hopefully, so it would be an awesome trial like that.
You'd just be like, ute? What's a ute?
The two utes, the sack of suds.
So, the one thing here, I live up in the suburbs in Westchester County. So with the jury duty, I'd always prefer Westchester County jury duty, because just if you get called to like federal, you have to go, I guess it's Brooklyn or downtown. Doing that at rush hour, I do it all the time, but I try not to do it at rush hour. So I'm hoping it'll be local.
You'll get somebody else, some other closeted racist that ran over leaving a bank robbery.
But the last two authors you have had on, both Jessica and Paula, I haven't read anything by either one of them, but now I just really want to. They both just sound amazingly entertaining. So.
Dude, I'll tell you what, I've been a fan of Jessica Blouse for quite a while. She's awesome, and her books are sick, and Paula's book is just as sick, and they're awesome, man.
I'm glad. Together some good summer reading.
I'll have to talk to those ladies. Maybe they have some books sitting around, and they can make some extra little money if you buy from them. It's probably not. I'm thinking of my small press friends putting out books who are like, please buy my book from me, I'll make an extra $2,
They probably want the Amazon sales anyway, so.
Yes, true.
It's just a shame. I used to work in a local bookstore that over 10 years that it's been out of business, but, that would have been just so awesome to have back then, and it just seems like there's so few of them now.
Yeah, I know. I was just at a reading in Lower Manhattan like 2 weeks ago, and I got to meet sighting Bigfoot. I'm like, I got to see a girl who works at a local bookstore, who was at the reading selling books, and it was like a sighting. I was like, holy shit, you still exist. You're like a unicorn. I didn't know you. I didn't know there were still these people out there selling books in person. Holy fuck.
If you got a local bookstore near you, you got to support it as much as you can. That's just the way life is.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
You totally have to. So I'm excited because I pulled you on the show because I love your stories, and I'm hoping you'll read one today. Do you have any floating around?
Yeah, actually, I do.
Wet your tongue, get ready to read your story. But I wanted to tell a quick little story. It's not even my own. It's a drug story, which I was itching. I was so itching to tell Jessica Blau, but we got cut off. She was talking about this guy running into her house with a Wonder Bread sack full of cocaine when she lived in Berkeley. And when I first met my wife, she lived up in Providence. She lived up in Providence with her friends Stacy and Lindsay, and they were going to art school up there. So they had this like guy that was living above him who was he was like a drug dealer, and he was I don't know how big of a deal he was, but you know, people would be coming and going and just pretty much buying just medium sized quantities of weed or whatever from this guy or whatever else. And one night, the girls were out. They were out drinking, the three of them, as they were known to do. At I think the bar is called the Fez in Providence. It's a really cool bar. I drank there a couple times. But as the story goes, they came home and whatever. The guy comes downstairs. He's like all beat up, the drug dealer, and he's basically bitching the girls out because he's like, "Didn't you hear me up there getting the fucking shit kicked out of me?" She's like, "How come you didn't come up there and save me?" And, like, basically, could you imagine that? Like, just being, like, a 19-year-old girl, and you hear, like, a drug dealer getting his fucking ass kicked upstairs. And
also
you're just like, "I
gotta
get up there,
you know,
and help this guy."
Because I do know your wife, and imagining her, like, what is she going to do if somebody's getting beat up by drug dealers?
Oh, yeah. Could you just picture her, like, doing, like, a backflip off the back of the couch and, like, sliding into the kitchen and getting, like, a machete? And, like, kicking the door down and, like, running up the stairs. Get the fuck away from me,
yelling him right out of the building, though, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They would probably pick her up and throw her out the window, you know, like, one fell swoop.
And she probably
luckily they weren't there.
She was flying out of the window.
Yeah. My wife is a badass, though. I could see her kicking some major ass if somebody was, you know.
To tell a quick little story, like when I first met you, you were telling us these stories about her that, you know, about how she was a little badass. And I was imagining, and the first night I met her, we were down at Pete's candy shop. And had a humorous song about getting a blowjob. And I dedicated it to Bud. And the whole time I'm thinking, oh, my God, his wife is going to stab me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a whole song that Chuck sang about me giving him a blowjob and how what was it? I was just a one time.
But I didn't want to talk to you the next day.
Yeah. Yeah, which, you know, we've had our ups and downs, right, Chuck?
She's,
you know?
she's just the sweetest thing in the world. She's the sweetest thing in the world, but I was expecting, like, oh, my God, she's going to kill me after this.
Oh, yeah, fits of fury.
Yeah.
So that's where we stand. You know, the fun shit.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You were saying real life friends, but we did actually start out as internet friends. It took
years.
Yeah. But I have to say, who is it? Paulo was amazed at the amount of writing you do. I've seen you posting it. I know. You know, so I bet you write more than anyone I think I've ever even, you know, you're not only great, but you're prolific.
Well, you know, Paul brought up a good point with that whole, like, it's all well and good now, but, you know, when you get to be an old person, you're like, holy fuck, I wish I hadn't posted, like, a zillion things that suck now that I'm, like, you know, 40 or whatever.
Well, the thing is, I was reading your stuff when you were in your early 20s, and it did not seem like someone in their early 20s, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a typical, those of us who were trying, because I know what I wrote 20 years ago was absolutely, I don't know, I found it the other day, and didn't want to read after the first two pages.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah. we all got our things that we are awesome at, and I'm definitely excited because it's been great to know you in person, and it's been really cool doing the whole Uno Kudo thing with you and Aaron Dietz and Aaron McParland, the Uno Kudo art and literature book, and I love the stories you sent there. It's kind of where I've really seen your writing kind of like really blossom in there, you know.
And I loved with the Uno Kudo, well, really Uno Kudo is what got me to meet my internet friends in real life. You know, before that, it was kind of like, well, I have the world on the internet. I have my own world, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, I couldn't be happy. Well, you know, personally, I couldn't be happier that I finally mixed the two worlds, and it was all basically Uno Kudo that did that. So I'll always have a very special place in my heart for that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Volume 3 coming out real soon. So I can't wait for it.
I saw a little sneak peek of some of the art that was being gathered for it, and I have to say, it looked amazing. So,
yeah, it's really something else.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm curious now. Are you ready to unveil a story for these people? Do you have anything you'd like to read?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I'm working on a book right now. I don't have any sort of release date or anything, but.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of the stories are taken from all different parts of my life, where some are early childhood, some are the teenage years. And after hearing Jessica and Paula, I kind of wanted, you know, one of the drug-fueled ones, but I have another one that's a little more sentimental, and I kind of figured it out. Yeah, and this one's called Looking. And it's from, the book will be called If I Had Wings, These Windmills Would Be Dead. So expect that sometime maybe in the summer. All right, here we go. You look like you should be standing on the bow of a ship in a storm, cursing the waves. Maybe it was the wool-knit cap that always covered his head, no matter what the weather was. Maybe it was the look on his face. When he looked at you, you felt like he was letting you live, but could change his mind at any moment. He was out of place in a quiet, landlocked suburb. We called him Mean Guy Joe. Mean Guy Joe was a regular at my coffee shop. He had a small coffee, and I learned after his first trip in, I should never leave room for milk. I should have known a mean guy like Mean Guy Joe didn't use milk. Like all good coffee shops, we had our coffee club cards. 10 coffees, and he got a free one. And every time in, Mean Guy Joe would grab a coffee card and ask me to stamp it for him. He had forgotten his card at home. Every now and then he'd walk in with 10 cards, each with one stamp on it, and I gave him a free coffee. We were spending a lot of money to print them, so I'd save the cards that weren't too badly wrinkled and hand them out when somebody got their first coffee. I only learned his name was Joe when I offered to keep his card there and stamp it whenever he came in. I wanted to put his name on it so the others would know whose card it was. And he simply replied, Joe. It was not to be confused with any of the other Joes. I wrote Mean Guy Joe. After a few chats about music and books and the like, I learned that Mean Guy Joe wasn't mean at all. After that, I felt kind of bad writing Mean Guy Joe on his card, but that's how all the employees knew him, and by then, we had 20 or 30 customer cards in a Rolodex, and there was Joe R and Joe L. The easiest way to keep track of him was just to keep calling him Mean Guy Joe. It turned out that Joe had been a sailor. He was in the Navy during the Korean War and had suffered a head injury at one point, and it gave him very limited use of his facial muscles. That's why he always looked like he was ready to kick an ass. He really liked jazz. Oh, sorry, I just skipped ahead. We only had short conversations, but they were almost daily. I learned he lived in a halfway house for people with brain injuries. I knew a few of the other residents. One guy would always try to steal tea bags when we weren't looking, and then there was Cliff, who was an engineer who had been hit by a drunk driver, leaving him with both physical and mental damage.
poor Cliff seemed angry at the world and everyone in it, and I didn't really blame him. Joe had been living in the halfway houses for most of his life. He really liked jazz. If Miles Davis or Thelonious Monk was playing, you could see the faintest hint of a smile on his face. It was more in his eyes than on his lips. Every morning, I would make sure there was a jazz CD in the six-disc changer. I would put it on random play, and that would give me much better odds that there would be a jazz song while he was there. Occasionally, he would ask me about some of the other music, too. He seemed to like Steely Dan. One day, he came in, and he didn't look mean. He looked sad. He told me he was moving to a different halfway house, one closer to a family member. His coffee card was still a long way from a free coffee, but if that was going to be his last one, it was going to be free. After finishing his coffee, he came over and held out his hand. I shook it and said goodbye. Thank you for talking to me. I really liked it here. He quickly turned and left. I was sad to see him go, but the feeling I got when he told me that was validation that I was on the right track for becoming the man I hoped to be.
Well, I really liked that story when I first read it, and I'm really glad you were able to come on and read it tonight to everybody else. Because, you know, like you said, man, it's like it's a little bit sentimental, but it's just like that whole thing. You can judge everybody until you actually get to talk to them and get that all kinds of stories about people, and you figure out how they really are, you know. That's like a total revelation, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that was one of the things I loved about working in a coffee shop is you never really had long conversations, but it would be over 6 months or a year, and there were enough little conversations that you really did get to find who people were, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
that's something else. I never had to work with, like, the public, you know? Like, that would have been nice, you know?
Well, you know what? The majority of the time it is not nice, but when you have those nice connections with certain people, and you know, you do, and one of the things I always tried to do there was at least, you know, recognize everybody that came in. Like, show a little appreciation, and maybe, especially at a coffee shop in the morning, maybe that starts their day out a little better. And, you know, you just try and change the world just a little bit at a time, you know.
Yeah, I think it really does do that. So, actually, we have a caller, Chuck, 505, you're on the air. Who's on the air? Who's calling in?
Who do you think, Buzz?
Oh, fuck. Is this Meg Cooper again?
Well, you know, I was trying to get down off this thing. I wanted to talk to Paula, and then I fell into some choya, which I don't know if you know, but it's a really, really brutal cactus.
Uh-huh.
And so I've been picking that shit out of my ass for, like, the last 20 minutes while you guys have been speaking. But I just wanted to say that I adore you guys. And, Chuck, you're amazing. That was a great story.
Well, thank you.
I love you, Bud. You know that. And I like to harass you whenever possible. And I just want to say that Paula is my favorite person in the whole world. And that's
isn't she great?
I love her. I love her.
She's a lot of fun. I was lucky enough to drink some alcohol with her, and whenever that can happen, that's past friends, right? What are you gonna do?
I think she's a martini girl. So you were saying beers, but you know you're gonna have to buy her a martini, and she'll buy you a beer. But although she might drink beers, I'm not sure. But I've always seen her with these fabulous martinis when I see her online. You know, when I see her pictures.
Well, there you go.
That event is June 2nd?
June 2nd, KGV Bar. It's Sunday evening, 6 p.m.
Oh,
I don't know.
I'm going to try and see if I can make it down there for that, because that just sounds awesome.
Oh, a lot of fun. It's always a lot of fun at KGV Bar. I heard a rumor that Meg Tewitt is trying to book something there. We'll see. It's always nice
I was hoping that Bud Smith was going to book it for us. We were, like, hoping and planning for that, Bud.
Yeah. I'm gonna see what I can do, Meg. But I'm, like, the new kid on the block. I'm 31 years old. You know, they don't take me that serious yet. I'm working on my gut. I want to try to get a bigger gut. I think that will help me.
You might have to bring a bag of cocaine, you know, like one of those bags.
Yeah.
Bring it with you when you're trying to get some clout over there. And see if
I'm definitely showing up with a bunch of coke and a gold plated gun.
Awesome. See, I'm so excited. I want to read with you, okay? I can't believe I didn't see you at AWP. I was like, what the hell?
Oh yeah, I'm full of shit. I'm going to every event, but I really only go to one or two, you know.
I know, but we were all excited about that one. I was excited to meet you and hang out and whatever. But I know that you had to go to LA for the Uno Kudo.
Yes, Uno Kudo, which we're reading everything now, put it all together, and I'm excited to start announcing what's in and what's not soon. So,
hey, am I in it, bud?
Did I get the check in the mail yet, Meg? I keep checking to see if I got the check.
No
inclusion. You know my rules.
You've forgotten me. You got married. There's like nothing in the mail. You know what I'm saying?
Uh huh. Well, you know what they say, Meg. Pay to play. You know.
I know you're expecting your IPA sent your way. I know. What do you want? A case? What is it? What's it going to cost me?
Well.
Now you may.
I don't know. I was
an IPA guy. I'm not sure. What's your beer? What's your beer of choice?
Yeah, I like IPA. I'm pretty much drinking Sierra Nevada most of the time. Yeah, I'm pretty easy.
You know, Meg. Aaron Dietz is also one of the editors for it, and I hear he's a lot cheaper to bribe than Bud.
Oh, Aaron.
Aaron already sent me back a thing that I was in the superhero thing, which I was psyched about, which is very cool.
There you go.
Were you in on that one too, Chuck?
That one, unfortunately, I didn't. I was working on my own thing and never quite formulated a good story for him. So,
I
would have loved to have done it.
Yeah, I sent them one on Catwoman, you know, as she ages, because Catwoman never ages. So mine was called Cats and Unplugged, you know. So Catwoman gets older and fatter, and they have to throw her off the third floor just to get her flying again. And the reason they couldn't take that one is because they said that they were afraid that they would get sued by
copyright,
whatever that comic book is. But I thought, really? You think they're really going to give a shit about my story? I was quite impressed that somebody would actually want to sue over something like that.
They should have done it just so you could get sued. That's how you get a name for yourself. Come on.
I would be sued by them.
Oh, Meg's doing all right, man. Every time I turn around, every time I turn around, Meg Tewitt's got some new thing being published somewhere. I'm excited. I'm excited about this book you got coming out with Paula. Paula's Press is publishing it.
I love her. It's been so great to work with her. I have to tell you, she talks about working with other people and how great they are, but I'll tell you, she's amazing to work with. And they only publish three books a year, and one of them is fiction, one is nonfiction, and one is poetry. So I really feel honored that my book will be coming out in the fall. Yeah.
What's your book about? What is it, fiction, poetry? What is it?
It's fiction, and it's long fiction. It's 13 stories, and it was interesting because I teach flash fiction, as you know, but I like to write flash. And
sure.
I had to actually elongate some of my stories. I'm always telling students, now hone it in, baby, hone it in. And now I had to actually pull them out. Paula's like, pull it out, Meg. I'm like, pull it out. Get that story. Get that backstory. Get that thing moving. And so it was really great to work with her because she really got me, and I really was really excited about doing that. And it's heavy, it's not light. I don't know if you know that about my work, but it's not real lightweight stuff.
Oh, I've read your books. You know, what do you think this is, Meg? I read your books. I don't pretend to read your books. I've read them. I've written you reviews. You know, they're not fake reviews, Meg. You know, how dare you insinuate that I'm just glossing over your work? What are your books called? What are they about?
It's Bound by Blue and Other Stories. And Bound by Blue is a flash. It was picked up by Medizin, and it was about a guy who scooped his eye out with a spoon. at the very end. And I don't know if you read that one, but it's I expanded it. And there's now 13 stories. It's about 150, 160 pages or something like that. So it'll be coming out in October when I'll be coming to New York to see you to buy you a damn beer, for Christ's sake.
Party time. Party time, Meg Tillett. Party time.
Huh?
All right.
Say
well,
anybody who gets an opportunity to come to New York and party with Bud Smith, do it.
And and where do you live, Chuck? Where do you live?
I'm about an hour north of the city, and luckily able to make it down there just about every weekend.
All right, well, I'm
going to
buy you a beer, too. I hope you come out, because I'll be at the salon when October, in the beginning of October, and I'll put it up, and I'll let you know. But I would love to see you there. It would be awesome.
Yeah.
It would be really exciting.
Oh, so you are scheduled to read at Jimmy 43's? In October?
Sarah Lipman's, and I'm going to work with Kate Cantrill, and her place, I think, is in what part? Where is she? She's not in the Bronx.
Oh, she's down there in Brooklyn, yeah.
Thank you, in Brooklyn. So I have two of those.
That's truck stopping there.
That Bud and I could figure out a KGB thing, even if we have to, you know, get the coke out and whatever. We'll figure something out so that we can have a couple. And Robert Vaughn will be there, you know.
Oh yeah, there's no getting away from Robert. He's the man of the town, you know. He's Mr. New York.
He gets everything.
Yeah,
awesome.
I went out drinking with Robert when he was here. I don't remember when that was. That was like February, and he just took me around to some badass places. He took me to Veselka's, which is like a Ukrainian 24-hour diner on 2nd Ave and 3rd Street. Man, that place is good.
Cool.
I just went back there the other day. What a spot. If you're ever in the city, when you go down and do your readings, down
Let's
Lower
go.
East Side, you got to hit up the Zelkas. You got to drink at Jimmy 43. It's just a great little spot over there.
All right, well, I plan on you partying with us, you and your wife. We got to cruise around and do a few places. I totally am into that. That would be so awesome. And I really look forward to meeting with you. Maybe Chuck can get in on this reading. That would be really nice.
Oh, yeah, Chuck's like a little. He's like a gangster. He makes shit happen. So yeah, he's in.
We gotta have some gangsters. Are you kidding? I'm a total. You know. Well,
Bud
what would
Smith
you call
is
me
the
Bud?
Only person to ever refer to me as a gangster.
But I'll take it. Yeah, I think
Aren't
what
you
can get right. Oh shit! So guys, I want to thank you both.
I had to bust in on it because, you know, I wanted to bust in when Paula was there, but I was so intrigued by what she was saying that I thought I should hold out and just hang on to the post and watch out for the dust devils and not get thrown around in the desert. So I just hung out and listened, but I thought I could nail you two guys at the end.
It was such a pleasure when you call in.
I've got plenty to add to my summer reading list now too. So this has been great.
Thank
great.
You,
bud.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Have a good night. Have some beer, okay?
Yeah, Meg, you too. Well, thanks for calling in again, and looking forward to everything. So.
Absolutely. Okay.
Right.
Bye, you guys. Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks to all the callers. Thanks to Chuck. Thanks to Jessica Blau. Thanks to Paula Bomer. Thanks to Meg Tewitt. And that's going to be the show for tonight. Apologize again for the technical difficulties there. Skype, you can go officially fuck yourself. I'm done with you, Skype. Well, see everybody next week. Thanks for listening.